Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Bittersweet Baking, a place where we talk to some of the best bakers in the industry and share real behind the scenes of running a successful baking business. I'm your host, Monica Kannan, and in this episode, we're talking to someone who's not just famous for her cakes, but mainly for her artisanal breads and her vibrant flavor combinations. We're talking to none other than Harini Shankaranarayanan. Hi, Harini, and thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Monica. It's a pleasure.
Before we start, I just have to ask you this one question. From whatever we've spoken, you sound like a very fancy, sophisticated person. Someone, you know, who hosts high teas frequently. Is that how you're in real life as well?
Actually not. It's kind of strange you say that because most people think, the first time they see me, they are always coming back to me later and saying, oh my gosh, I was so intimidated by you. I didn't know whether I could come up and, say hello to you or talk to you. But actually, I'm just quite the opposite. I'm very friendly. I'm very down to earth. And if you want to go by Chennai language, I'm also very local. So, it's fine. Maybe it's just my accent or the way I speak. Or if you see me in person, my little upturned nose, which always seems to be sticking up in the air. But really, no, I'm not like that at all.
Yeah, but now that you say, I kind of get this intimidating and sophisticated vibes from you.
Oops. No. Get rid of that impression right now.
Definitely. Okay. So to kickstart things, would you like to introduce yourself to our audience and tell us how your baking journey started?
Okay. So, I have always loved to eat, okay? I'm a foodie. I think I was born that way. And like many people of my generation, I grew up reading a lot of books because there was no television, there was no internet, nothing. So it was books, which was all the way. And in the books, I really loved Enid Blyton's. And if any of you have read Enid Blyton's, they're filled with all this lovely, yummy food, which at that point of time, you've never seen in your life. You're just going by the description and you assume they're yummy and you somehow want to lay your hands on them. Okay, and the only way that you can do that is by trying to make all that yourself. And I would say the second biggest influence for me was when my parents took me to see Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I don't know if you've seen the movie, but man, I was just drooling the whole time at the movie. Okay, so again, my love for food, my love for sweets, my love for cakes, my love for chocolates all grew from that. And so, like I told you, the simplest thing then for you to do would be to bake these things to eat. I mean, you only heard of scones, you've never seen it. So that took me on a trip to the various libraries where you would actually sit there and pore over all these magazines and cookbooks. There was no photocopying machine. So at that point of time, if you wanted to get a recipe, you actually had to manually write it down. And then you would come back home. And just for your information, I from basically a very orthodox Tambram family. So even eggs were like a big thing. So we would actually smuggle in eggs, take it upstairs away from my grandparents' prying eyes and try our experiments. So I think the very first thing I made, if I remember right, was when I was in the fourth standard, I made something called rock buns. Believe me, it wasn't the texture of rocks. It was just called rock buns because it was all craggy and, it had lots of raisins and candied peel. And in my little mind at that point of time, it was the most delicious thing that I had ever eaten. Yeah, so you just asked me to introduce myself and here I was rambling on and on. Yeah, sure.
No, it was perfect. I mean, I can't believe you said it, but I grew up reading Enid Blyton books and, they'd go on these picnics and they have clotted cream, scones, toast finger sandwiches.
I know. Yeah. I mean, when I read about tongue sandwiches, I thought they were delicious until I actually found out they were really tongue. They were cow, ox, tongue. And then I'm like, huh, okay, maybe I don't like that anymore.
I thought I
Yeah.
was the only person to, you know, take food from those books, but then it's like, you know, amazing to find someone else who's taken that as well from those books.
Yeah. I think there were a lot of people who were super inspired by what they read at that point of time. Yeah.
Yeah, but then, you know, it's like a great thing if a person can just write about something and then another person is inspired from that. There's no smell, there's no taste, there's no pictures, just words. And then that kickstarts a person's entire
That's the
baking
beauty of
journey.
words.
Yes.
That's the beauty of words, right? Where it can really like bring that picture in front of your eyes, and you're actually tasting it without, like you said, even having seen a picture of it.
True, true. So, what do you do now? Are you like a full-time baker, or is this your side hobby? How do you do it?
I'm not a full-time baker in the sense that I don't have a, you know, a professional space out of which I work from, nor do I retail in any outlets. So I would call myself a part-time baker who had a hobby, which is now also bringing her a little income. Yeah.
Oh, okay, so would it be correct to call you the quintessential home baker?
Yes, I am definitely the quintessential home baker because I use equipment which you would find in anybody's home. I bake out of my kitchen, and it's a really super tiny kitchen because there can be only one person in that kitchen at any given point. And anytime something needs to go into the refrigerator, it goes into the refrigerator, which I store all my daily fruit, vegetable, milk, you know, all that stuff in. So which means things have to be moved around, adjusted, so, you know, you can manage to push what you want into one shelf. My oven is a home oven. And even, you know, the refrigerator that I use is the regular home refrigerator, you know, where you're going to store your fruit, vegetables and milk. So anytime something needs to go into the refrigerator, something has to come out. So, you know, you're just trying to adjust and make space in one shelf where you can put what you need to put in. Yeah, so I'm working in a home kitchen with a home oven, no professional ovens, no professional deep freezer, cooler. Yeah, so I guess I am the quintessential home baker.
Wow, I completely get what you're saying about the refrigerator. Whenever I bake, I have to keep fighting with my mom for space with the vegetables and all the food and all of that.
Hey, my refrigerator, if it had a mouth and eyes, it would be crying. It's stuffed to the brim. You know, I have flour, I have dry fruits, I have nuts, I have seeds, I have my sourdough starter, it's got chocolate. It's probably got everything else in the fridge, but what is usually there in a home fridge. So, yeah, I get you. I get what you're saying.
I can totally imagine your fridge. And one more thing is a certain demographic of our listeners are home bakers, you know, like housewives who've turned home baker. Mm-hmm. They've converted their hobbies to their profession. And though I have
Right.
no experience with this, I've seen how a few people, like, you know, they kind of struggle to manage their family with baking. And baking is a very physically tasking, it's very physically demanding as well. So how do you manage that?
Right.
Juggle it?
It is very difficult. That could probably be one of the reasons why I didn't, you know, go for it in a large scale, because I'm one of those control freaks. Okay, I need to be there for everything, whether it's procuring the packaging material or the raw material or, you know, the baking. I'm never happy actually delegating it to somebody else. That's one. And two, I also felt if I had a family, I need to have or at least give a certain amount of attention to my family. Because if I didn't do it, then really, what's the point of having a family? So, yeah, it is a tightrope balance. But eventually, you find your way. But if this is going to be your bread and butter, then that's a whole different ball game, you know, where you will have to rework a lot of things to fit it in. And in my case, maybe I got lucky from my perspective, because I have a husband who's always traveling. He's hardly ever at home. So which means I'm pretty much on my own through the day to be able to do what I want to do. And I have a grown-up daughter who's no longer at home as well. So, hey, it's my space during the day.
Yeah, that's like a really cool answer. So so now your supply for ingredients would be very different from people who are baking like a lot of cakes. So how do
that's
you
right.
manage what supplies you want? How do you like have a systematic inventory you do, or do you buy it from like normal grocery shops? How do you manage your supplies and ingredients?
See, it's very simple. If you have to be sustainable, you have to learn to source local, okay? You cannot always depend on imported stuff. Yes, I do get stuff up from abroad. Anytime I travel or someone whom I know travels, they all get long lists of things that I want, which you do get sometimes. But that is not something I can depend on for a constant supply, right? So if I'm baking my bread, the flour has to come from somewhere local. That's the only way I can ensure consistency in my end result. And you have to learn how to work with things that are available to you. Maybe being born many years ago, when a lot of these ingredients and equipment was not available, you just learn to be resourceful. You learn to manage with things that you have. You learn little tricks, little tips that, you know, your experience has taught you. And that's how you manage. You cannot really say, hey, you know what? If I don't have a KitchenAid, a stand mixer, I can't make a cake. That's not true. All you need is a bowl, a ladle, and a whisk. And you can do it. It's a little more elbow grease. But it's not something that's not possible. So you just have to learn to work with what you have. And I do think if you truly have the passion, you will make it work.
That is so true, especially now, totally on social media, you can see how people are baking without an oven. They have cakes and pressure cookers and kadai. And everything, there's eggless baking, they don't use baking soda. So there's a lot of innovation coming up in this space.
I really don't know if it's innovation because, you know, my grandmother used to bake in a pressure cooker. She was the one who told me how you bake in a pressure cooker about 30 years ago. And she would get this river sand and she would wash it and dry it out in the sun and use that at the base of her pressure cooker. And she would make us these little cookies with ghee and maida, oh, they were delicious. So, yeah, I mean, these are there. I think we just learned to rediscover what was already there.
Wow, that sounds really nice because I was just speaking to some other people, some other bakers previously, and they were saying that baking is something that's not passed on from our grandmothers, like it's done in the West. But then I think you're really lucky to have had a grandmother like that.
My grandmother was a big experimenter. She was not a baker, but anything that she saw, she felt she had to try and replicate. And I hope some of it has passed down to me, because she would always tell me, you know, I wanted to make these cookies like I got in a particular bakery in a particular place. And then I tried to make it and I couldn't. And she said, you know what? I finally discovered that they don't use soda bicarbonate. They use ammonium carbonate. That's what gives it that flaky crispness. So she was that kind of a person. But I wouldn't call her a baker by any means. So, yeah, she was an experimenter and an inventor.
She sounds amazing. And talking about all of this trials and innovations and all of that. So when you started baking for custom orders, like before that period, like when you were finalizing your recipes and as such, there would have been a point like, you know, where a lot of recipes would have failed as such when you were at least experimenting with new recipes. Was there ever a point where you were like, this is not for me, I want to stop it? Did you ever want to throw the towel in?
Never really. And see, I have, like I told you, I've been baking since I was in the fourth grade. So it's years and years of baking. And somehow, over the years, you've just learned to look at recipes and know whether something would work or not work. And this is more instinctive. I'm a very instinctive baker. Okay. I'll do something instinctively. And then probably sit and think about, oh, I did this. And that's why probably that worked. But yeah, when I go, I just go with the flow. I'm instinctive. And I think that instinct comes from the years of experience which you have had. So, you know, if something is going wrong, maybe if you did this, that would work out right. And through the years, simply doing this, I have also learned to read a lot about it. Because if I'm doing something, I want to understand why it worked or why something didn't work. Because I think once you understand that, then you know what you need to do, whether it is to rectify a mistake or to replicate something.
That is so true, you know, like understanding the science behind baking. And until very recently, I didn't even know what the difference between baking soda and baking powder was. But once I learned it, I think a lot of my baking recipes have turned out so much better. And I've been able to innovate with my own
You know what?
recipes.
I hated
Do you have
science in
any?
school. I simply hated science. And now, you know, when I talk to people and I'm talking to them about the science of baking, the first thing they ask me is, are you a science student? And I'm like, no, I hated science. And I wish they had taught me science through baking. Probably I might have liked science more.
Oh, that could be a new business idea,
I
starting a
know.
science class for students, baking. Do you have any recommendations for new bakers on what books to read, you know, to understand the in-depths of baking and not just recipes?
See, when I was young, I had what I now call the black book. Okay, this was a book given to my mom by an English lady. It was a nice, big, fat black book, and it had everything in it, absolutely everything. Whether it was a short crust pastry or a choux pastry or a wedding cake, how to stack the cake, how you needed to slice the cake to make even slices. It had everything. And that book was really my favorite pastime when I was in school. Whenever I was bored, I would just keep reading that. Unfortunately, I don't know where that book is, but I learned a lot of my fundamentals from that. So now, if you ask me, what book would I recommend? I really don't know. I have no idea because I pick up bits and pieces of knowledge from all over the place. So, sorry, no recommendations here.
That is fine. That is fine. Like, so you've been telling us that you've been baking since you were a child. Have you ever baked professionally, like, you know, when you were in college, or have you worked somewhere,
Okay,
with baking?
so now my love for food, baking, cooking, all of this took me to doing my degree in hotel management. So I am IHM Chennai graduate, and this was in the 80s. So I don't know whether you could say that is my professional training, because as far as baking went, we didn't do much. We did like super, super basic things. But what it did instill in me was a sense of discipline in the way you work to make sure that your space, your working space, was always neat and clean. To have your mise en place, everything, you know, all your ingredients out there so you don't forget something, putting things away, you know, things like that. It does instill in you a way, a working ethic, so to speak. Yes, I did train very briefly, you know, for a bit in the ITC group, but somehow I could not imagine myself in that profession for the rest of my life. So, yeah, I never pursued a profession in the hospitality industry. Instead, I went back to college and I did bachelor's in English. And after I finished that, I went and did a master's in theater. So, yeah, I was all over the place. But I think wow. Each of these did contribute in some way to making me the kind of person that I am today. So, yeah, I don't regret any of it.
Wow. Until I think a few years ago, hotel management wasn't something that was very popular as such. It was actually something that was kind of looked down upon, right?
Yeah, when I was in college, you know, our class had 80 students and we were 10 girls. That's it. Yeah, it was not something that they recommended, especially for a girl. It was not something that you did. But I've always liked to tread on a path less frequented, less chosen, out of the way. So for me, it was perfect.
Wow. So initially, you mentioned that your family was quite orthodox, but your education, hotel management, bachelor's in English, master's in theater, it's very non-orthodox studies. Like, was your family completely on board with it? How is
totally
that?
Totally supportive. I have the most wonderful parents who were very understanding. They knew they could not... you know, push me to do the usual, the engineering, medicine. Like I told you, I was a tomboy, I was a rebel. So they figured the best way to let me grow up was to encourage me to pursue whatever it is that I felt that suited me the best. So yeah, they were totally on board with it.
That is really great to have your parents on board from the minute you're starting something. Because a lot of people have been talking with their parents were slightly hesitant in the beginning, but then they were completely on board towards the end.
I think secretly my mom was actually quite thrilled, you know, that I was doing all this. So, yeah.
Okay, so this is one question I really, really wanted to ask you. So I went through your Instagram feed and a lot of the cakes and breads that you're making are very atypical. They're not like the typical chocolate cake, vanilla cake or tiramisu or such. Like, I think I saw one post where you made focaccia with grapes.
Not an invention. That's
I've never heard
that's
of that.
That's a thing. That's an actual thing.
Okay, is that... Is that popular?
India, in Europe, in Italy, it is a thing. They actually wait for a particular kind of grape to be harvested, the tiny sweet grapes, and they actually make it out of that. So I cannot take any credit for coming up with things like that. It's actually a thing. It was probably not very popular in India or not heard of here, but yeah, I didn't come up with it.
Are all these inspirations from books as well?
Books, yes. Travel. I love traveling. I've traveled quite a bit. So anywhere that I go, I would love to try out the local stuff, which is very limiting because I'm a vegetarian. So, you know, whatever vegetarian stuff that I can lay my hands on, I have a pretty decent palate, even if I say so myself. So I just try to remember these flavors and somehow in my head, I just feel like certain flavors will go together or certain flavors won't go together. So when I come back, I just like to combine and make things. Like I told you, I'm very instinctive in the way I cook. So I don't really plan this is what I'm going to do. I go there and just do what I you know, what drives me to go there at that point. That's it. And then if it tastes good, then I probably sit back and say, huh, okay, so this is what I did. That actually tasted good. So maybe that's something I can convince somebody else to try.
Are your customers equally open to new flavor combinations, or are they rigid with what they want?
A lot of them are a little rigid, but then I think that's because they've not been exposed to it, right? But sometimes I am able to convince some of them to try something else. But I have some customers who are ever willing to try out new flavor combinations. So I'm lucky that way. Because honestly, I don't have a fixed menu. No. I don't have a menu. So if someone calls me up and they want to order something and they ask me for a menu, I don't have a menu. So the menu comes up based on my conversation with the person, knowing the flavors that they like. If they are allergic to something, then I come up with certain things and I, you know, throw it out to them so they can decide whether they would like to try it or go for the tried and tested vanilla and chocolate and red velvet. But tell me, what's the fun in that? How many times can you bake that same thing again?
Yes. Yeah. So you mentioned that how most of your cake designs or cake flavors are very on the spot and they're not fixed. So how do you come up with the pricing for them?
I have a standard. I know that's really a good question. See, because I have a standard pricing. Okay, now I have with me like different styles of cakes. Okay, now if there is a cake which is a butter cake which uses certain kinds of fruits, I know this will be my base price. Okay, now if it's going to use local fruit, let's say if it's going to use apples, you know, that's far cheaper than, say, using blueberries. So if I'm using exotic fruit, a butter cake, it'll be a certain price slab. And then if it's going to, on top of that, have buttercream, if it's going to be one of, you know, the Italian meringue buttercream or Swiss meringue, then that's like a certain price range. If it's going to have ganache in it, that would be different. You know, so I do have certain base prices for different styles and different types of cakes. And then on top of it, depending on what the customer wants, the pricing may go up or may go down. For example, let's just take it in a very simple manner. Let's just take something as a chocolate cake. Okay, so now you can say a base chocolate cake with dark chocolate ganache will be so much. Now, maybe that person wants little nuts added to it. So obviously, then the price factor is going to go up a little bit. Then on top of that, let's say they want, you know, maybe something else added to it. So then the price point will again vary. So what I do is I actually give a breakup to the customer so they know exactly what they're paying for. So they can decide if, you know, adding nuts is too much. If they want pecans or hazelnuts, the price is going to go up. So they have the option to choose. Do I want it? Do I not want it? Sometimes if it's a special occasion, they'll be like, yeah, go ahead and add it. And sometimes if it's too expensive, they probably come down and say, you know what, forget the praline and the nuts. Let's just do like a basic chocolate cake. Does it make sense what I'm telling you? Yeah.
Yes. It completely does. Having these price slabs and, you know, these breakups of individual things, it's really fair to both the baker and the customer. So that is like a really nice way of pricing it. Okay. So coming to my last question, there are a lot of bakers in Chennai, like a lot. So do you feel like there's a community here, or is it supportive, or are there cat fights, or how do you feel about the baking
scenario? When there are a lot of people, there'll be a bit of everything. Okay. Some of my best friends are bakers. I think, you know, baking has opened up a whole circle of friends for me here in Chennai. But you will also have cat fights. You will also have bitching. That's a part of it. That's a part of any profession, really. So why would baking be any different? It really depends upon how you wish to approach it. I would rather focus on my friends. So I'm very happy. We have a wonderfully supportive circle of bakers here in Chennai. So much so that, you know how expensive some of this equipment is, right? Baking equipment. So, you know, you could just go to them and say, hey, you know what? I don't have this mold. Do any of you have it? And someone would come up and say, yeah, I have it. I'll lend it to you. Don't worry about it. Here, go ahead and use it. And once you're done, give it back to me. And sometimes when certain recipes don't work, we troubleshoot with each other. When we get an order, if we are not able to do it, we pass it on to the other bakers. So, yeah, I think they are a pretty supportive community. Just ignore the ones who are not supportive.
This sounds like an amazing support system. To new bakers, how would you suggest that they become a part of this community?
Don't be intimidated. Just come and say hello. You know, and I think these days there are a lot of these baking networks and meets and, online forums and things like that. So just get active on them. Don't feel offended sometimes if somebody snubs you or somebody is rude. It doesn't matter. Maybe they've just had a long day or a hard day. Move on, and make friends. I think that's the way to go about it.
That's a very optimistic and well-balanced answer. So now coming to the last segment of our podcast, I have a quick rapid fire for you. So you can answer, with the first word that comes to your mind.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Who is one baker or pastry chef that you look up to?
Reinhardt. He's a bread baker.
Okay, considering that you do a lot of breads, that makes sense. What is one pastry that you could eat for the rest of your life?
Ooh, there's so many of them. How can I just name one? Okay, I'll just go with my all-time favorite, chocolate. No, can I change that to hazelnut? No, that chocolate is fine.
Okay, let's have it as chocolate and hazelnut. Okay, what is the toughest thing in your job?
The toughest thing is to think that, you've created something wonderful and it's got a great flavor palette and you give it to the customer and they taste it and they go, huh, what? This is not even edible. So, that's the toughest part when your ideas and the customer's expectations don't match.
Would you bake your own birthday cake or
would
you order it?
See, I used to bake my own birthday cake. Till a few years back, I refused to bake my birthday cake. I think it's so sad to bake my own. But I always have my wonderful baker buddy. Someone always bakes something and sends it over. So, I'm never without a cake for my birthday.
That's very sweet. Okay, what is one question that you always get asked, but you absolutely hate it?
There are so many questions. One question which I hate, which people ask me, is, why don't you open a cafe? Why don't you expand this business? No, I don't want to. And that's why I didn't get into this business all those years ago, and I got out of it when I could.
Okay. So Harini, with this we come to the end of our podcast and it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. It was really so nice. I was honestly scared of you in the beginning, but then I'm in awe of you now.
Then now we
really
should
fun.
Meet in person sometime so you can get that awe out as well and be friends.
Definitely.
Yeah, and the pleasure was all mine, Monica. Thanks for having me.